1984. Gravatar was my personal favorite 25-cent game at the video arcade. Ronald Reagan was president, and a one-woman show ran for 156 sold-out performances on Broadway. It was called Whoopi.
How you doing, good looking?
Great, great.
Good. My name is Fontaine, and love is my game. When I kiss the girls, hey, they all aflame. Come on, let me kiss your hand. Oh, this is a bad ring you got on.
Back in the day, Whoopi Goldberg was an edgy, up-and-coming 28-year-old comedian who did dozens of different characters. The show launched her career and inspired a generation of aspiring comics, including our listener Julie Bailey. The daughter of Jamaican immigrants, she grew up in New York in the Bronx, where she says she never really fit in.
I went to a German Lutheran school from the time I was 6 years old. So every morning after the Pledge of Allegiance, we'd say, Guten Morgen, Herr Kaesmeier, and then classes would commence. So, you know, basically I grew up a raisin in a rice pudding. From, I got to tell you, maybe around 6 or 7 years old, I wanted to be a comedian. I just knew I wanted to make people laugh. Of course, my parents felt like all of that should be, you know, focused on jury summations. But I thought, you know, there was something else. And when I was growing up, there used to be a whole lot of shows on TV in the afternoon, like Merv Griffin had a show and Mike Douglas had a show, and they would always have these comedians. I was probably the only 8-year-old little black kid who had a crush on Rodney Dangerfield in like 1970. I never thought it was something that I could do because I never saw anybody who looked like me doing that. And then when I was like 19 or 20, I saw Whoopi. And I remember I was sitting way up in the balcony, and out comes this chocolate brown woman, you know, into the spotlight. And she raises her head up, and, you know, I see this Cupid doll face.
Okay, like, okay. Like, not really, okay. Okay, like, I totally love to surf, you know, because, like, no, really, I do.
That's how I talked all the time. It's like, they called me a valley girl. They're like, where are you from in the Bronx? The valley. People around me were laughing, and I couldn't even laugh. It was funny, but I couldn't even laugh because I was mesmerized.
And like a lot of people come up to me and they go like, are you a valley girl? And I go, no, I'm a surfer, because before there was the mall, there was the ocean, okay?
I used to be able to, 30 years ago, say the show word for word. But sort of a seminal moment was, she does this piece, and I remember it so clearly. She puts this slip, a half slip, on her head, and, you know, she would pretend she was this beautiful, you know, blonde girl.
This is my long, luxurious blonde hair. Ain't it pretty? Oh, look, it's in my eyes now.
You know, everybody was laughing when she did that. And I was laughing, but I was crying too, because that was me. You know, you'd take the waistband and put it around your waist, then take your mom's bobby pins, you know, and pin it so that it would fit on your head. And then all the girls would just, you know, flip their hair back, and they would be so sexy and cool and fabulous. And, you know, I had pigtails. I couldn't do that.
I am, and she's going to want me to make them stop, but she ain't even going to know I'm there, because I'm going to have blonde hair, blue eyes, and I'm going to be white.
And you're going to ask me to tell you how it ends, and I can't remember, because I remember that I was tearing up a lot, you know.
And she said if I sat in the vat of Clorox till hell froze over, I wasn't going to be nothing but black. And she was right, too, because I sat in the Clorox and I got burned.
I'm normally not even ever speechless, but as I think back to that moment, it did change my life, because there was this woman who was unashamed of the way she looked and the way her hair looked and who she was. And she was up there not just saying funny things, but saying true things. And that was it. I said, okay, this is what I want to do. And, you know, I had to have an interesting conversation with my parents about the fact that, no, I'm not going to law or any other school. I'm going to California, and I'm going to be a comedian. That did not go well. So, you know, I'm packing my suitcase, my Lady Baltimore suitcase, and my mother's like, maybe you should be an architect. That's what you should do. She's like, I don't know what's going to happen when you don't come back from your vacation. I'm like, Mom, it's not a vacation. I'm leaving. So I went to L.A., and I would just go to comedy clubs, like, every night. I would do open mics, and I would just go up there. There's no, like, magic story to it. You know, I just sort of kept doing it until I just felt it wasn't clicking, and I stopped. So I did advertising. Let me tell you, I can make a presentation to 1,000 corporate eggheads, because there ain't nothing like being in an open mic at 2 o'clock in the morning where there's like 7 people who are all drunk and they're throwing beer at you and you're trying to get through a set. What the hell can frighten me now? Nothing. There's nobody like Whoopi. She was profane and profound. And my aha moment with her was about comedy, but it was about life. How to live your life out loud. But it's
Julie Bailey, who listens to Studio 360 on WNYC. Have you had a life-changing experience after seeing a Broadway show or a Hollywood movie or read a novel or listened to a record? If so, write to us at studio360.org and we might put your aha moment on the air. Derek John produced our story with help from Krista Ripple.